forgot. But it's all review anyway, so. Anyway, but his name would be Emmanuel. Also in Isaiah 9:6, his name was going to be, he was going to be a child born, a son given. From God, human perspective, from God's perspective, his name was going to be Wonderful Counselor, one title. He was going to be a Wonderful Counselor. He's going to be known as the Mighty God. He was going to be known as the Prince of Peace. The rule was not going, was going to be upon his shoulder, the government. He was going to rule. And that rule was going to be extended on. You see that in the next verse and so forth. But this one who is going to sit upon David's throne, his greater son, is one that we observed last week. And we do find a lot of, quite a few prophecies concerning the one who is going to sit upon David's throne. In Ezekiel's prophecy, you find a lot of very specific things, but we do find some here. And this is one place where we see, we've seen it, we saw it last week, that Jehovah's going to raise unto David a righteous branch in 23:5 of Jeremiah. And so he's going to be a king. A king shall reign, and he's going to prosper, it says in the AV, but he's going to act wisely. He's going to execute judgment and righteousness in the earth. And his name is going to be the Lord our righteousness, and that is Jehovah Tsidkenu. He is Jehovah our righteousness. And so he is going to be a righteous ruler who's going to sit upon David's throne. Very interestingly, we have all of this leading up to the Lord Jesus Christ. And when you stop and look at the birth, when the angel Gabriel in Luke chapter 1, before verse 35, he says it tells Mary that she's going to have a son, and this son will sit upon his father David's throne. And he describes how he's going to sit upon the throne. Now, when he was born a babe in a manger. But who did the three magi, the wise men, who did they come looking for? They were looking for the one who was born king of the Jews. He didn't live as a king and reign as a king during his ministry, but he did demonstrate who he was. As the God-man, he did demonstrate that he was more than a man. He was Jehovah. And he would qualify as Jehovah our righteousness. He would qualify for that title. But he is Jehovah, and he comes, and as he came to sit on his throne, he did offer a kingdom to his people Israel. He offered them the kingdom, and what happened? They rejected him, and they crucified him. But when they crucified him, how was he crucified? Well, you had it written in three different languages on the top of the cross that he was Jesus from Nazareth, the King of the Jews. Now, that didn't impress the Jews a whole lot. They wanted him to, wanted Pilate to remove that or to change it and say that he said that he was the King of the Jews. But he had professed to be the King, and he did so to Pilate. And Pilate wrote that on the cross when he was crucified. After he arose again and ascended up to the Father's right hand, he still hasn't sat upon David's throne. He's not sitting on David's throne. Now, some would think that he's reigning over the hearts of men today from heaven, but he's not. He's seated at the Father's right hand, and he will come at his second coming. When he comes back conquering, he will come back, and in the millennial kingdom, as he establishes his kingdom, he will reign in fulfillment of the promises in the Old Testament, as well as at the beginning of the in the gospel accounts, in where it's divided in our Bibles to the New Testament, which is still Old Testament anyway. And so he will reign as king, though. Now, up to this point, now we see that at this time we've seen that there's going to be judgment brought upon God's people. And the northern kingdom's gone. Israel is gone. The southern kingdom, it's going. And when the southern kingdom goes, we have seen and we will see again that they will be brought back. Jehovah will bring his people back into the land. They had promises in the first Abrahamic covenant. The promise was given in Genesis 15, beginning in verse 18, to the down to whatever 23, whatever however many verses there are there. But it goes on to say give them specific land promises. And they have had the most they ever had of that was in Solomon's reign. But they will have that, it will be completely fulfilled in the future. Now, what about the southern kingdom? They're going to be carried away. But when they're brought back, he's not just bringing the southern kingdom back into the land and restore them to the land, but he's going to bring the United Kingdom back. And so they will be brought back, and Jehovah, God the Son, now incarnate and resurrected and glorified, he will sit upon the throne of David, and he will reign over the house of Israel again, and as promised in throughout the Old Testament. And he will be known as Jehovah, our righteousness. He will also be known as Emmanuel, that is, God with us. He is not only going to be a wonderful counselor, but he will also, and a prince of peace, but he's going to be the mighty God, and he is also the father of an age. So he is going to be reigning as the God-man. Now, as we move back into Jeremiah 23, in Jeremiah's day, we've been noticing a lot of the pre-incarnate Son has given word to Jeremiah concerning the judgment upon Judah, the southern kingdom, here in Jeremiah. And it does have quite an effect upon Jeremiah as he sees the wickedness of the people, the wickedness of the leadership as it passes down and influences the people. And so they committed spiritual adultery. They were idolaters, but they also were involved in adultery. They were immoral. Their whole lifestyle matched up to what they believed. And what you believe does affect your lifestyle, or it should. And so these were worshiping idols of the heathen, the Gentiles around about them. And but even worse than that, they were twisting Jehovah's own words and misapplying them and misusing them for their own purposes. And so we're going to see this morning that they're evil, they're responsible for their evil, and they will be judged, and they're going to be judged for their evil. They can't get away from it. And one thing, we're going to go through a passage that section here that we turn to in the doctrine of God, when we teach the doctrine of God, a passage that does describe, you can't hide from God. You can't get away from him. And it's very clear, and that was true back then, it's true today, that you can't really get away. And yet some of these leaders down in the southern kingdom, they thought they could get away with their bad behavior and their idolatry. They thought that they could get away with it even in the temple. So we want to look, first of all, in chapter 23, we want to look at verses 9 through 32 in Jeremiah chapter 23. But you have Jehovah, the God of Israel, and his immensity demonstrated. And so the priests of Israel, they can't get away with their spiritual adultery, nor their adultery, nor anything else that they're doing. They can't get away. And we begin this section, Jeremiah begins it, with an outcry to Jehovah on account of the condition of the people and their wickedness. They are terribly wicked people. And so as we begin in verse 9, and verses 9 and 10, Jeremiah says, "Mine heart within me is broken." And so it's and because of the prophets, all my bones shake. I am like a drunken man and like a man whom wine hath overcome, because Jehovah and because of the words of his holiness. For the land is full of adulterers, for because of swearing or cursing, now it's had a curse upon it, the land mourneth. The pleasant places of the wilderness are dried up, and their course is evil, and their force is not right. So there's going to be a drought upon the land. Drought brings about famine, and that's one thing that was prophesied that would take place upon the land. They would have famine. They would die of famine, one of the ways they would die. But there was going to be famine. The land was just full of adulterers, and so there's a curse upon the land. And that's something that will take place, and that does affect Jeremiah, so that sends him reeling like a drunken man as it affects him. This was not an easy task for Jeremiah, to look at the wickedness of the people and then to have to stand up and speak to them and tell them what Jehovah had to say. They were affected by it, and they didn't really care to hear it, and it was a hard task to do. Now, you have the corruption of the leaders of Judah, and Jehovah has seen it. They can't get away from it, and that's what we see down through verse 32 now. And so you have the pollution of the prophets and the priests, and Jehovah has found them that way. Notice verse 11. For both prophet and priest are profane. That is, they're polluted. And so they're polluted, and they polluted the land, we'll see. But anyway, they're polluted. Yea, in my house have I found their wickedness, saith Jehovah. So they can't get away. Jehovah has seen everything that they do in the temple. And so they're carrying on, they're doing things, but God sees everything. He has found them that way. So it's interesting, just the description here that he uses, he's found them there. Well, he knew it all the time as he found them there, but it says he uses a human description here, though I found them, found their wickedness, saith Jehovah. Now, another thing that we're going to see, and we've seen it all along, is all the times that Jehovah speaks. And so Jeremiah passes on the words that he's speaking, they're not Jeremiah speaking to the people and sending warning, but it's the word, these are the words of Jehovah. He speaks, and so he sees it all. And so as we go on looking at their pollution, he says, wherefore their way shall be unto them as slippery ways in the darkness. And so this sounds a little bit like some of the imprecatory psalms, where the psalmist wishes that their way would be slippery and there would be a pit in their way and it would be dark and they would slip into the pit and they would be destroyed or ruined. But here Jehovah says that their way is going to be slippery. It's going to be devastating to them and dangerous because of their behavior in the temple. They shall be pushed away, really, it says. They're going to be violently driven on, pushed on, and fall therein. And so the way is slippery, but they're not going to escape. They're going to be falling in, they're going to fall. For I will bring evil or calamity upon them, even the year of their visitation, saith Jehovah. We'll see this visitation, he's going to visit, but it's not going to be a friendly visit. This visit's going to be a visit of destruction. And so it is coming, the year of their visitation, when they go into destruction. And I have seen. Now, we saw back in verse 11, Jehovah said, I found. And now he says, I have seen folly in the prophets. The word folly, he saw things that were kind of absurd things in amongst the prophets of Samaria. So now he moves up to Samaria. And up in Samaria, this was up in the northern kingdom, which had been carried away. But up there, they prophesied by Baal before they were carried away. And so the reason that the northern kingdom was carried away, it was because of their idolatry, and they worshiped Baal. And caused my people Israel to err. I have seen also. Now notice, so he saw it up there before, and he dealt with them. It's done. They're carried off into captivity. But as you move into the verse 14, I have seen also in the prophets of Jerusalem an horrible thing. Some would translate the horrible thing or filthiness. And so he's seen what they've done. They commit adultery and walk in lies. They strengthen also the hands of evildoers, that none doth return from his wickedness. They are all of them unto me as Sodom, and the inhabitants thereof as Gomorrah. Now remember what God did to Sodom and Gomorrah. Because of their immorality, God destroyed them. And so they were destroyed. God destroyed those two cities. But these prophets, the priests, what are they doing? Well, they're lying, and they're immoral, but they're also lying, and they're walking in lies. They're deceiving the people and leading the people astray. So as we come down to the 15th verse, we find that there is going to be judgment in this polluted land. Therefore, Thus saith Jehovah Sabaoth. Now you notice I don't always emphasize these titles, but here it is coming back that there's going to be some, he's going to deal with them. He's over the heavenly hosts, and he is going to deal with these people. But he says, concerning the prophets, behold, I will feed them with wormwood. Now, I don't know, we don't have any wormwood that I know of, any wormwood trees around here, but it would be very bitter, a very nasty kind of wood, and so it would be a nasty thing to have to eat. And make them drink the water of gall, not a very, very good meal at all. For from the prophets of Jerusalem is pollutedness gone forth into all the land. And so they polluted the whole land, is the idea. The land is polluted because of the prophets in Jerusalem, as they lie. And verses 16 and 17, Jehovah gives warning now to the people that they're not to listen to these evil prophets. Thus saith Jehovah Sabaoth, hearken not unto the words of the prophets that prophesy unto you. They make you vain. And what they do is they deceive you, and they cause you to be empty, is the idea. They speak a vision of their own heart, and not out from the mouth of Jehovah. And so they're not speaking the words of Jehovah. Now it's interesting, and in this light, you go down through the context, and you notice all the times that Jeremiah says, Jehovah saith. Thus saith Jehovah. Jehovah said. He says, Jehovah said. Jeremiah is speaking the words from Jehovah. But these false prophets, they come up with these things in their within themselves, within their inner man, and they say they have a vision. Well, they certainly weren't having a vision from God. They say still unto them that despise me, Jehovah hath said. Now see, they're quoting Jehovah, they say. But Jehovah hath said, ye shall have peace. Now, what's Jeremiah been saying? You're going to have destruction. And so he's described judgment upon them, but they say, no, it's going to be peace. And they shall say unto every one that walketh after the imagination, we could say the stubbornnesses of his own heart, no evil shall come upon you. You can get away with it. You can go on in the way you're going. And so they are prophesying falsely. Now, 18 through 22, you have the going forth of the anger of Jehovah because of these false prophets, and this is not pleasing. For who hath stood in the counsel of Jehovah that and hath perceived and heard his word? The counsel or secret, but have you been there when Jehovah, when there was a conversation that Jehovah carried on so that you heard him? Who hath marked his word? And heard it. Who's caused it? Who's been caused to really mark his word and pay attention to it? Who's paid attention? Well, they are not doing that. Behold, a whirlwind of Jehovah has gone forth in fury, even a grievous whirlwind. It shall fall grievously upon the head of the wicked. The anger of Jehovah shall not return until he hath executed, until he hath performed the thoughts of his heart. In the latter days, ye shall consider it perfectly, when it says perfectly, you're going to consider it for yourselves, is what he says. I have not sent these prophets, yet they ran. So they weren't sent, and they didn't have any idea what Jehovah had had in his counsel, what he would say, what he would think. They are speaking from their own hearts, but he didn't send them, yet they ran down to give their prophecy. He says, I have not spoken to them, yet they have prophesied. But if they had stood in my counsel, if they had stood there when Jehovah spoke, they would have picked up something different and caused my people to hear my words. Then they should have turned them from their evil way and from the evil of their doings. Now, the leadership in Israel, and that's true, leadership can lead astray, and that's just what happened in Israel. Jehovah wasn't to them as he was to Jeremiah, but he hadn't been to these false prophets, but yet they claimed to have visions and they spoke, and they didn't have Jehovah's counsel, though. And so they, but if they had, the people would have turned, but they didn't. And so you have here, we have a description here of the potential and the actual. The potential was that these prophets, they could have heard what Jehovah said and represented Jehovah's word, but they didn't represent Jehovah's word. They were representing their own word, and as a result, the people, they led them astray. And they thought they could get away with their evil. Well, they didn't, but the, that was the potential. But the actual is they're going to be judged. And so there is a potential, there's an actual in God's program, in the decree. There is room where God says it could have been this way, but it's not the way it is, but it could have been. And so there is a potential, and you have the actual as a result of what they do. Now we come to some interesting verses as we come to verses 23 and pick up here with the through 26. And here we do see something about the character of God. We have a description here, we could say, of the nature of God, part of the nature of God. As we look at these verses here, they do describe something about God's essence. And one thing we will note here is that God is immense. He's not only immense, he is omnipresent, is a term we learned when we were kids in Sunday school, many of us, I'm sure, and we always saw God as being omnipresent. But he's more than just present within the universe, omnipresent. He was present to everything in his created universe, but yet God is immense. He's a God who goes beyond the universe. And we see something of God's description of himself here as he speaks through Isaiah to these wicked leaders of Israel. Now notice what he says as Elohim. He says, I am Elohim at hand. He says, I saith Jehovah. So he's close by. And he is close by. He found them. He saw them. He said that. He said, I found them in verse 11. In verse 13, he's seen Samaria. In verse 14, he's seen the prophets in Jerusalem. He's seen it all. He's not far off. So he's not like a stick of wood or a piece of stone that others will go up and worship. He's there. He's everywhere. And so he's not. He's a God who's at hand. He's close by and not a God afar off. He isn't some distant, remote God. He's always near. And so you see something about the omnipresence of God. Now this gets down to another aspect of God. He says, can any hide himself in secret places that I shall not see him, saith Jehovah. Interesting, you can't get away from God. We've pointed it out again. We'll point it out again. They were in the temple. He found them there in their wickedness. Down in verses 13 and 14, he saw those up in Samaria first in the northern kingdom, now in the southern kingdom. Verse 14, he sees there these prophets. He sees all about them. He knows all about them. You can't hide from him. He's going to see anybody. Now, that was true back then, and he demonstrates it earlier in the context. He says, I found, I've seen. And so I'll see him. You can hide anywhere. You can go anywhere and hide. You can't get away. And that was that's just as true today. I heard a radio preacher one time giving a testimony, and he was describing when he was a youth that he learned that God knows your thoughts and God knows all about you. So when he had bad thoughts, he had this old army helmet. He was living back after World War II, about the time I was growing up. And he'd get this army helmet and put it on his head to hide his thoughts from God. Well, you can't, nothing you can do. You can't hide from God. And so you can't hide your thoughts, but you can't hide from God. And God knew everything these wicked false prophets were doing in Israel and in Judah here now. In the southern kingdom, you really can't. God's going to see him anywhere. He says, "You false prophets, you can't hide. You can't hide." And notice the next thing, though. He says, "Do not I fill?" Now it says "fill heaven," but it's articular, and we could say "the heavens," and it's plural. We take it as plural here. He fills the heavens. the first heaven, the second heaven, the third heaven. He fills all three heavens, and he also fills the earth, he says. Now, elsewhere, we can see that he extends beyond the heavens. He's greater than the created universe, but he is immense, but he does fill the whole created universe, though. And you can't get away from him. And notice he ends it with, saith Jehovah. So you guys can give false prophets and you can prophecy. You can carry on your bad lifestyle. You can sin. You can live in sin, but he said you can't get away with it. God's there. God sees it. God knows. And so you can't get away with any of it. And so these prophets, Jehovah nails them that they can't get away with their behavior, which they might think they can. He goes on to say, I've heard what the prophets said. Does God have ears? This is what we would call an anthropomorphism in this case, because he hears as if he has ears to hear. But he says, I have heard what the prophets said. Well, he's there. He's there. You can't get away from him. But what did they say? That prophesy lies. They're prophesying lies in my name, saying, I have dreamed, I have dreamed. And so I've had a dream now, and then, so now they are speaking a dream that's supposed to be from Jehovah, but they are lying as they speak their lies in the name, the name or the character of Jehovah, supposedly. Jehovah responds, how long shall this be in the heart of the prophets that prophesy lies? Yea, they are prophets of deceit of their own heart. And so they are deceitful, and that's they're just giving their own what comes from within them, which think to cause my people to forget my name by their dreams, which they tell every man to his neighbor. And so they keep recounting these dreams as their fathers have forgotten my name by Baal. And so they went after Baal, the fathers did, but he says here, these false prophets, they're causing them to turn away and to forget the name of Jehovah, though they profess to be speaking from Jehovah by dreams and by their visions. And so that's the Lord knows all about it. Jehovah knows everything that these prophets are up to, and they cannot get away from it. But their deceit is seen here as they tell these, they keep recounting it, and it's recounted from neighbor to neighbor. They just keep spreading their lies. The prophet that hath a dream, let him tell a dream. And he that hath my word, let him speak my word faithfully or in truth. What is the chaff to the wheat, saith Jehovah? Well, let him lie, but the one who speaks from him, it'll come out. The chaff blows away, the wheat's left. When you come to chaff and wheat, Jehovah's word will stand. Of course, theirs will not, as we see it here. Now, you have Jehovah's opposition to the false prophets as we move into the next few verses here. Is not my word like as fire, saith Jehovah, and like a hammer that breaketh the rock in pieces? It's interesting, the rock, Petra, this would be of Selah. That's the word Selah. He breaks the rock in pieces. Therefore, behold, I am against the prophets, saith Jehovah, that steal my words, every one from his neighbor. And so they misuse his words. They're deceitful. They lie. And then he says, behold, I am against the prophets, saith Jehovah, that use their tongues and say, he saith. And so now they say that Jehovah is saying. So they're speaking in the name of Jehovah. But did Jehovah say these things? No. They're liars. They're deceitful. And God is going to deal with them. So behold, I am against them that prophesy false dreams, saith Jehovah. So for the third time, we see Jehovah says, I'm against these characters. He's against them. And he says, and do tell them and cause my people to err by their lies and by their lightness. Yet I sent them not, nor commanded them. Therefore, they shall not profit this people at all, saith Jehovah. And so what they're doing, they're leading the people astray. There's nothing profitable for the people in following them. What is it going to bring about? Well, ultimately, it's going to bring judgment, we'll see again. And that's just where the southern kingdom is headed for. They're headed for judgment. Now, he moves on, and we're going to see the recurrence of the word burden. And so there's going to be a burden. There's a burden of the words of those who have perverted Jehovah's word. And so there's going to be a burden upon them. And we have a questioning concerning the burdening of the Lord as we move on from 33 through 35. And when this people or the prophet or priest shall ask thee, saying, now notice he asked thee, saying, now I believe here he's addressing Jeremiah, what is the burden of Jehovah? What is the burden of Jehovah? Anyway, when they ask him that, thou shalt then say unto them, what burden? I will even forsake you, saith Jehovah. And so they're looking, what's the burden of Jehovah? What's the prophet of Jehovah, in other words? And as for the prophet and the priest and the people, let's say, shall say, the burden of Jehovah, I will even punish that man and his house. It's interesting, they translated it punish here. Now, we saw the year of visitation a little bit earlier. This is the word to visit. He says, I will even visit upon that man and his house. He's going to visit, but as we said there, this is not a friendly visit. Now, this visit is going to be a visit in judgment. Thus shall ye say, everyone to his neighbor and everyone to his brother, what hath Jehovah answered, and what hath Jehovah spoken? And the burden of Jehovah shall ye mention no more, for every man's word shall be his burden. So they're spreading the lies and that have been spoken by the false prophets. They've spread these things, and it's not the burden of Jehovah, but their own statements, their own word, will be each individual's burden. For ye have perverted the words of the living God, of the Jehovah Sabaoth, our Elohim. He's the living Elohim. You've perverted the word of the Jehovah Sabaoth, our Elohim. And so they will stand judgment because of what they have done. And so that verse is kind of a key to the burden. It's not the burden that Jehovah's dumping on them that they need to be concerned about. It's the burden, each man's word that he says in a lie, it's going to be the burden that's going to be he's going to bear, that's going to come upon him and bear him down, because they are speaking lies, and they've done so in the name of Jehovah. Now, this burden continues, thus shalt thou say, and this is Jeremiah speaking to the prophet, what hath Jehovah answered thee, and what hath Jehovah spoken again, he's to say. But now as we come to verse 38, we come to they're going to blame the burden upon, their burden upon Jehovah. But since ye say, the burden of Jehovah, therefore thus saith Jehovah, because ye say this word, the burden of Jehovah, and I have sent unto you, saying, ye shall not say the burden of Jehovah, therefore behold, I, and he says it emphatically, even I will utterly forget you, and I will forsake you and the city that I gave you and your fathers, and cast you out of my presence. You'll be cast out of my face, away from my face. Now, where was Jehovah at this time in Israel or in the southern kingdom? He was in Jerusalem, but where in Jerusalem? He was in the temple. Where did he find these prophets and priests and their wickedness? In the temple. And so they were there carrying on, but he's going to cast them out of his presence, from his face. They're going to be removed from Jerusalem. And I will bring an everlasting, it's going to be a perpetual reproach upon you, and a perpetual shame which shall not be forgotten. So they're going to be taken, they're going to be shamed because of the lies that they have spread, the lies that have affected their lives, that have brought about their behavior. It is reproach, a reproach, and it's going to be something that's going to bring about continuous shame upon these people who had the potential to do better, but being led by their false prophets, they did what the false prophets predicted, and they did not listen to the word of Jehovah, but they paid attention to the false prophets. Now, as we come to chapter 24, we have another object lesson that's given to Jeremiah, And this object lesson, you have two baskets. You have two baskets of figs, as he says here in verse 1. Jehovah showed me. So now Jehovah, who was unto Jeremiah in his presence with Jeremiah, he now shows him something. He shows him, he says, he showed me, and behold, two baskets of figs were before the temple of Jehovah. So you have two baskets now of figs, two different kinds of baskets, though, as we'll see. And this is to, and some of these are going to, some are good, some are bad. Some are edible, some are unedible. And he's going to demonstrate what will happen to these who lead and to Zedekiah eventually, the last king of Judah before the big captivity, before their final carrying away in 586 B.C. Now, as he says this, we find the time here, the time you can set real easily, but it's after that Nebuchadnezzar, we'll just use the term the way we spell it, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, had carried away captive Jeconiah, the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, and the princes of Judah with the carpenters and smiths from Jerusalem, and he had brought them to Babylon. It's interesting, go back to the Kings or to the Chronicles, and you see when they were carried away, took away the important men, the key men, the chief men who were talented, who could do things, and so he took them down to Babylon where he could put them to use. And he could use them to build for him and whatever. He took these and left the poor people behind. But he took Jeconiah in this case, this spelling. But this is the guy Keniah that we saw back in 22 after his brief reign when he set up his uncle after him. But this was Jehoiakim's son anyway. So we get the picture as to the time setting here. And this is about 609 B.C., the southern kingdom will fall, and Jerusalem will fall in 586 B.C., a key date within Israel. But as you notice, it describes the kind of baskets here, the content of the baskets. One basket had very good figs, even like the figs that are first ripe, and the other basket had naughty figs. They were misbehaving. Really, it's a word that would be evil figs. I like the naughty figs, though. But they were evil. They were bad. We could just say they were bad figs, which could not be eaten. They were so bad for their badness, they couldn't be eaten. Then said Jehovah unto me. So Jehovah, who was to him, he showed him something. He continues speaking. The pre-incarnate Son of God shows him the baskets, and he says to him, "What seest thou, Jeremiah?" And I said, "Figs, the good figs, very good, and the evil, very evil, that cannot be eaten. They are so evil." They're not just naughty, but they are evil. So they translate it evil. Now, as we come down to verse 4, we move on to verses 4 through 10, and you have the presence of Jeremiah again of Jehovah, of the word of Jehovah to Jeremiah. I need to pick up my statement there. Giving an interpretation to the object lesson. Now, in verse 4, again, he says, again, the word, and again, we could capitalize that. It's looking at the word, the eternal word, but the word was to Jeremiah. And so it just didn't come to me, or it was to me. Not unto, it doesn't say Jeremiah here, but it was to me, as Jeremiah writes. And the word that was present with Jeremiah, notice what it does. He's saying, he says, he speaks, "Thus saith Jehovah, the Elohim of Israel." And so he's going to describe this object lesson in clear terms to them. And you find the identity of the good figs. Now, the good figs, these would be those that were edible ones. He says, "Like these good figs, so will I acknowledge them that are carried away captive," or literally just the captivity. He's going to acknowledge the captivity. Now, they're going to be judged already, those who have been carried away and brought back. But they're carried away. whom I have sent out of this place into the land of the Chaldeans for their good. It's for their good. If they stayed around, they would be there for the slaughter that would take place later on. But instead, they've been taken off to Babylon before. And so their life is better than if they had stayed. Now, those in the land don't believe that, but who are left behind don't think so. But anyway, he says, "For I will set mine eyes upon them for good, and I will bring them again to this land." Now, the good, it's not that they're good, but the circumstances in which they're going to find themselves is going to be good. And so he's going to bring them back to the land. "And I will build them and not pull them down, and I will plant them and not pluck them up." Now, we know that this has not happened. Jeconiah never made it back to the land. In fact, when he was removed, he was not going to come back, God said. "You're not coming back to the land." So he didn't come back. But we do know that this people who was carried away will come back one day. And that will be when Jehovah comes back as the incarnate Son of God now, the resurrected and glorified one, as he comes back to establish his kingdom. They will be back and they won't be removed. But he goes on in verse 7 to describe us this. He says, "And I will give them an heart to know me." And so they are going to get a heart to know me. Now, this heart, we will see that there are going to be some changes that take place when we get over to chapter 31. And he gives a new covenant to Israel. There's a promise of a new covenant to them. And he's going to do something about their sin, and he will do something with a heart. But here, he's going to write his law in their hearts, and he's going to put law in their inward parts and write it in their hearts in Jeremiah 31. But here he says he's going to give them a heart to know me. And this could correspond. This doesn't correspond to the new covenant in Jeremiah 31, but it does relate back to Deuteronomy 30, when he's going to give them a heart by when he returns them into the land in the promise of the Palestinian covenant there, what we call the Palestinian covenant, but where he swore by an oath to them that he would give them the land and bring them back. But he says, "And I will give them a heart to know me, that I am Jehovah." So they'll know that he is Jehovah. "And they shall be my people. And I," emphatically, "will be their God." He will be their Elohim. Now, that is something that will take place in the future, but it hasn't taken place yet. But here we do find prophetically and the promise that they will return. "For they shall return unto me with their whole heart." They're going to return unto me, and he's going to bring them back into the land. But they're going to be able to do so only because he's going to give them a new heart. And that's the way that to know him. And so they will do as they need to do. Now, the next verses in this chapter move on deal with the bad figs, that is those who are left behind. And so the one basket deals with Jeconiah and those who are carried off into captivity. They're not going to be totally wiped out. There's not going to be a slaughter amongst them. They're spared that. But the bad figs, which cannot be eaten, they are so bad. "Surely thus saith Jehovah, so will I give Zedekiah, the king of Judah, and his princes, and the residue of Jerusalem that remain in this land, and them that dwell in the land of Egypt." Now, when he includes the land of Egypt, we're not exactly sure what it deals with, but some that could be, there are several possibilities. But there were some Jews who were down in Egypt. Now, after the final carrying away, many did flee Palestine and did go down to the land of Egypt. And they went down, but this is before that takes place. But they're going to be dealing with all of those who are in Jerusalem and in the land of Egypt and so on. But notice what he says, "And I will give them to be removed." And this is going to be a fearful thing for them as they're going to be removed into all the kingdoms of the earth. For their heart to be a reproach, for their hurt, to be a reproach and a proverb, a taunt and a curse in all places whither I shall drive them. And so you have a fourfold description of what's going to take place of them, a reproach, a proverb, a taunt and a curse. But they're going to be spread out, not just to the land of Babylon, but they're going to be spread to the countries, he says. and to all the countries where they're going to be given. And I will send the sword, the famine, and the pestilence. Now we saw that he's going to judge them in three ways. We saw that back towards the opening. Among them till they be consumed from off the land, and I will give them, give unto them and to their fathers that I gave unto them and to unto their fathers. So eventually, wherever the Jews have been spread, they will be brought back. This has never happened yet. You did have a minor return with Ezra, with Nehemiah. You did have the rebuilding of the walls of the city. But then during the Lord's time here on earth, you did have Jews who were living in the land who had returned from captivity and 70 years of captivity. You had Jews back in the land who were living there, but you never had all of Israel. You, on the day of Pentecost, you could see that from Jews who came from all over the place back for the feast day on Pentecost. But there were Jews who Jews were all over the world, and today they're all over the world yet. But the time will come when they will be brought back into the land in fulfillment of prophecy. And so he goes beyond here, beyond just these immediate people who didn't come back to the land. Jeconiah was not going to be brought back into the land. But there will be Jews one day who will come back when Jehovah does bring them back. And it's Jehovah who's going to bring them back when he says he says, I will bring them back. And so we can, it's guaranteed. There have been many prophecies that have been fulfilled already. And just as sure as those prophecies have been fulfilled, these prophecies will be one day Israel will be in the land. They will have the whole land promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They will have the whole land that was sworn to them, and they will have it for a possession without being driven from the land. And that will take place when the king, who will be Jehovah Tzidkenu, Jehovah our righteousness, returns. So he came in his first coming, he became incarnate. So he became the incarnate Word of God. And so the eternal Word came to be flesh and tented amongst us. And yet we know many prophecies were fulfilled dealing with his first coming. Many prophecies were fulfilled about his ministry and about his death, his resurrection. You can find prophecies in the Old Testament concerning those events. And just as sure as those took place, he is going to return. And before he comes back, though, and his return to establish his kingdom in righteousness, what will take place before that will be caught up. He's coming in the atmospheric heavens first. And so he's going to take us away from this earth to be with himself. And that's what we anticipate. And so the millennial kingdom, the promises of the return to the land, the promises of judgment back here, they just tell us something about God. And we do see something about God and his essence that he is. He's a God who's not far away. He's a God who is near. He's a God who's present. He's a God who is as close as you can be. And so in the Old Testament, the Gentiles, they were far off. These Jews weren't very close either, really. But when you get down to it, we see in Ephesians chapter 2 that we who were far off have now been made near. And so we're near today, as near as we can get to God. They had God dwelling in the temple, but yet he's going to kick them out. And he's going to leave, but they're going to get kicked out. And yet, when he left, he did come back as a babe, but yet when he comes back the next, he's not coming to earth the next time he comes into contact, close contact, he's coming in the atmospheric heavens to catch us away. And that's what we anticipate. The hope of Israel is, he's going to come back in his second coming stomping, and he's going to establish a kingdom and bring all of his people from wherever they are around the world. He's going to bring them in and establish his kingdom. Father, we're thankful again for your word and for the hope that we have within us. It's a better hope. We're thankful, not because we deserve it, but because of grace and because of your perfect program. And we do anticipate the coming of your son, just as those Jews who live down into the tribulation, some who are believers, will be anticipating and have the hope in them concerning the coming of your son to conquer and to establish his kingdom. But again, we're thankful for grace as we consider these things. Amen.